We'll call a meeting to order. Good morning, everybody. Like the first order of business, welcome Pat McDonald, our newest member of the commission. She's Vice President of Human Resources and Director of the Intel Talent Organization at Intel Corporation. And not every company has a talent director, but it's a really nice thing to have and a big job for a big company like Intel. Since joining Intel in 1986 as a summer intern, Pat's held a wide range of engineering, manufacturing, and management positions, including Vice President and Plant Manager of Fab 20 in Hillsboro, leading 1,800 employees. One of the things that's always great to know about the engineering folks at Intel, many of them come from Oregon State, and Pat's an Oregon State grad. So all you Duck fans, look out. She served as director of the ATMX organization, director of product health enhancement organization, and pioneered Intel's healthcare marketplace collaborative, an alliance of Portland healthcare providers, a health plan, and the Virginia Mason Institute. Pat's long been a champion of diversity, and at Intel, she is executive sponsor for the Women at Intel Network with 40 chapters worldwide. So welcome, Pat. We're very happy to have you a member of the commission team. I need to have a motion and second to grant a leave of absence to Commissioner Pierce, who is out of town, and Commissioner Chamberlain, who is sick with pneumonia, it turns out.
So move.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. And Commissioner Cerruta has been caught up in traffic, but he will be here through the course of the meeting. I do need a motion and second for approval of the minutes of the meeting of February 10th, 2016. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. And now, Curtis Robinhold is going to do the executive report today. Our friend Mr. Wyatt is in Europe, and Curtis, I know you're all prepped for this.
So indeed I am. We're going to call them Deputy Executive Director comments this this month. There are, as you'll all know and recall, the official Executive Director's report is available on the back table. Bill usually takes this time at the front of the meeting to just update announcements, issues that he would like to raise with you, and I will take his spot and do the same. He is indeed with our Air Service Development Team in London working on our hope for direct air service to London from PDX. Not this year, probably not next year, but the year after that, I suppose, is most likely. You may have noticed on your way in, we had our four monthly safety champions up on the board. I hope you all took note. We're really focused on safety at the port, as you know, and are working in particular with our employees, but also our business partners to try to enhance our understanding of how we can improve our own safety performance. To that end, Cindy's going to take just a second here and give us a sort of topic du jour for safety at the port.
Great. Thank you very much, Curtis. You've heard a lot about the OSHA Safety and Health Recognition Program called SHARP. We occasionally will have people who are recognized for SHARP, and we have different departments that are recognized for SHARP achievements. What we're doing now to further our culture of safety at the port is we're building on that by establishing a safety management system, which in some organizations you'll hear referred to as an SMS. And we're focusing on five key components for that. The first is compliance with our policies and procedures. Second is hazard identification, risk analysis, and corrective action. The third is safety recognition, which you saw this morning, promotion and competency, doing a lot of training around that. The fourth is safety performance and trend reporting. And the fifth is behavior-based safety. We really think that focusing on these five components will contribute positively to our safety culture. And it mirrors the SMS frameworks that we see in various other organizations, including, by the way, the International Civil Aviation Organization, or ICAO. Also, FAA has this SMS type of approach. I also wanted to mention that during the next few months, several of our senior leaders are going to be visiting other ports, transportation and energy companies, to learn how those other organizations have facilitated a culture shift in their safety culture. We want to bring back those ideas and best practices to our executive team to consider adopting here at the port, and we'll be keeping you all informed about those exciting new ideas. So thank you, Curtis. That's
great.
It.
Thank you, Cindy. By way of broader announcements, we have continued growth, as I think everyone knows, at PDX. We've had a new set of announcements from Southwest Airlines about new service to the LA area beginning August 7th. I don't know why anyone would want to go to the LA area, but new service at from Southwest to Burbank in Ontario. That makes Southwest the provider for all four of the LA Basin airports. The announcement of new service will bring more than 800 additional seats to and from PDX every day, and increases Southwest service level in Portland to an all-time high peak of 17 peak period nonstop destinations. Just great news for us, and continues Southwest's growth at PDX. The International Trade and Logistics Report, we've talked about several times with you. It was the effort led by the governor that the port participated in over the course of the fall. It was completed in February and released on February 26th. Just wanted to let you know about the four big recommendations that came out of that work. First, one that we're deeply focused on, resolution of Terminal 6 labor management issues and restoration of weekly container service as a priority for the state. There are continued conversations there. We're hopeful that that gets resolved this year. We'll continue our slog on that front. Second, operational enhancements and actions to improve the existing logistics system. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. We've also been very active on that. Strategic investments in freight logistics to sustain services. And fourth, policy actions to enhance Oregon trade and improve the transport of goods. Our team, Keith's team in particular, has been working on supporting shippers around the state to, include creation of a drop yard for the monthly Westwood container service at T6, the restart of an upriver barge rail shuttle to connect with farmers in eastern Oregon, southeastern Washington and Idaho, and exploration of both a container reuse pilot and an intermodal rail facility for mid-Willamette Valley shippers. So our team, Rob Smith, I think I saw earlier here in the room, our team's been very active on this. It's, I think, another sign of our real engagement outside the Portland metropolitan area to try to get help for shippers who are trying to move beyond T6 as we continue to struggle with our container service with ILW and ICTSI continuing to disagree about how to proceed in the future. We had, just in the form of general announcements, we had an interesting, Steve, I don't know if you got a photo for me, an interesting visitor at Terminal 4 this week. This is a cruise ship that is docked at T4 right now. It does a route that runs down the Columbia and back up past Portland, upriver, a 7 or 8 day trip that includes historic descriptions of what you're seeing in the Lewis and Clark Heritage area, available for only $7,000 to $8,000 per week for a room, I understand. Is that right, Martha? It's out of my league. On Saturday, February 27th, the port sponsored a Friends of Trees planting at the Argay Park Rose neighborhood. It was another great way for port staff to meet and work with our adjacent neighbors. I participated in one of these plantings earlier, late last year, actually, with my kids. A great time, and we see a lot of port staff out. Continues our longstanding partnership with Friends of Trees. There's a new PDX art blog. For those of you who track it, we continue to have a great rotation of art in the terminal, and our team has a new blog at, ready for it, pdxart.portofportland.online. It sort of updates visitors and customers about regional arts activities, including our own exhibits in the airport. The Portland Harbor Superfund proposed plan comment period is coming up. As we've talked about several times in this group, the proposed plan will likely be released by EPA in the first week of April. Then ensues a 60-day comment period. Our team's been actively engaged with the city and other PRPs to talk about the issues of that plan as we think it will be released, and our concerns about the right sort of balance between environmental performance and cleanup and continued use of the harbor area for jobs and job creation. And finally, another Troutdale Airport Master Plan meeting is coming up on March 16th. I think we've enlisted Bob Levy to help in that effort. This is the long-term plan for Troutdale Airport. The port will be discussing recommendations with the Project Advisory Committee on runway length and industrial development planning. It's been a couple years underway, and I think this will be sort of the endpoint of that big external conversation, and we'll move on to working with the city and neighbors to implement that plan. So with that, Mr. President, I will conclude my comments.
Great.
Thank you. Is there a motion and second to approve the executive director's report? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And next, we've got a couple of general discussion items, which are updates on legislative issues, state and federal, and Bobby Stedman's going to introduce those items. Good morning,
Bobby.
We have
an annual practice of providing commissioners with a state and federal legislative briefing. Leading the conversation today is Catherine Williams, who's our state affairs manager, and Rick Finn, who's our federal affairs manager. Catherine's going to talk to kind of provide you an update of the major legislation that was passed in the short session in February. And then Rick's going to provide you with some information regarding the work we're doing with federal agencies and members of Congress in 2016.
Thank you, Bobby. Good morning.
Good morning.
I thought I would start by briefly describing the scope of the Port of Portland's federal relationships. Obviously, the port relies on many, many federal agencies to perform its mission, and I've just listed a sample of them here. There are many, many more with which the port must interact in order to be successful. As far as the congressional members with whom we interact are concerned, given the reach of the port's marine and aviation businesses, we interact with senators and House members from the entire Pacific Northwest, including Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. All of them have an interest in what the Port of Portland does. And then to make our federal voice as loud and as broad and as diverse as possible, it's important for a medium-sized port like the Port of Portland to engage with as many national, regional, and local partners as possible. So obviously we are members of several national trade associations that have common airport, seaport, and freight mobility interests. We rely heavily on regional organizations like the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association to help us advocate for our marine interests. And then there are several local partners with whom we ally, including the Portland Business Alliance, to advance our federal interests. Just a brief scan of the 2016 congressional environment. I don't think any of this will be surprising to you, but unfortunately, the kind of federal spending on which the federal agencies with whom we work depend continues to be very constrained. There are even arguments continuing in Congress right now about further decreasing the amount of non-security discretionary spending to be appropriated to federal agencies for the next fiscal year. So the federal agencies on whom we depend are very constrained in the new initiatives and new spending that they can provide. Every year, the Port of Portland works very hard to try to secure as much funding as possible for these federal agencies. For example, we want the local corps of engineers to have as much money as possible to do all of the activities on the Columbia, Snake, Willamette River system that are important to our marine business. So working on those appropriations is a year-in and year-out activity that just continues nonstop. But there are a few other legislative opportunities that are unique to 2016 in which we have a strong interest. For example, Congress is due to renew all of the programs and policies for the Federal Aviation Administration this year, and I'll talk a little bit more about our priorities for that legislation in a moment. Also, Congress may take up legislation authorizing new projects and policies for the Corps of Engineers in a water resources development bill. And then finally, the port is very interested in congressional approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the free trade agreement between the United States and 11 other countries in the Asia-Pacific region. Congress still does maintain a ban on earmarks, so that means it's more important than ever that the Port of Portland try to compete for merit-based grants that several federal agencies administer, and I'll talk about those in just a moment. Turning to our priorities for 2016 at the federal level, looking port-wide at all of our businesses and activities, we are always alert for opportunities to apply for grants for port capital projects. The FAA does maintain a fairly regular system of grants for airport projects, but other agencies like the Department of Transportation, EPA, and the Department of Homeland Security do provide some competitive merit-based grants for which we try to compete. Turning to our marine business, our highest priority there is trying to secure as much funding as possible for the Corps of Engineers. And that is necessary so that the Corps can do as much maintenance dredging as possible on the Columbia Snake River system. Every year, the Corps of Engineers has to dredge the Columbia River to maintain the 43-foot authorized navigation channel. And that requires roughly $35 to $45 million each year from Congress. So we work very hard with our partners to secure as much money as possible for the Corps of Engineers. Dredging is also necessary at the mouth of the Columbia River. That is another $15 to $25 million annual recurring requirement for the Corps of Engineers. And then finally, in terms of maintenance dredging, we are trying to secure some additional funding to do maintenance dredging at what we call the Albina Turning Basin on the Willamette River. It's a short stretch of the Willamette River near Terminal 2 and Terminal 4 that is shoaling and therefore requires dredging to remove the sediment that is being deposited there. Another important federal priority for us is the Corps of Engineers project to rehabilitate the jetties at the mouth of the Columbia River. The jetty system there is well over 100 years old and requires major maintenance and rehabilitation from time to time to maintain its function of disciplining and training the natural flow of the Columbia River. Without those jetties, the navigation channel would very quickly fill in, and it would be like putting a cork in a bottle. Shipping would be obviously thoroughly disrupted. The Corps is starting a major multi-year project that will cost somewhere between $250 and $300 million to give those jetties another 50 years of functional life. So funding for that project has to be appropriated by Congress every year. And so we are obviously actively working to secure that funding. The President's budget request for the next fiscal year does include a healthy amount of funding for that project, $21.9 million, so we're very pleased with that proposal. And then another high priority for us in the marine field is funding for the upriver locks. Those are essential, of course, to the barging system that exists on the Columbia Snake River system. There are eight locks between Portland and the Port of Lewiston. And of course, those locks have to be maintained in good order. They will be going through a major maintenance period starting in December of this year, and actually will be closed for several weeks while the Corps repairs those locks. Fortunately, it appears that all the funding is in place to do those necessary repairs. Turning to aviation, I mentioned that Congress is due to consider the FAA authorization bill this year. And that is a piece of legislation that comes up every 5 or 6 years to change or renew the policies and programs of the Federal Aviation Administration. This year, for that legislation, our top priority is to increase the ceiling for the passenger facility charge, or PFC. The PFC is a fee that is collected by all airports on departing or connecting passengers. Back in the year 2000, Congress limited that fee to $4.50 per passenger. So it has not been adjusted for 16 years and obviously has lost a lot of its purchasing power. For the Port of Portland, revenue from the PFC is our second most important source of funding for airport capital projects after bond revenue. So it's obviously an important source of funding for our capital projects. The port and other airports around the country have been vigorously advocating for an increase in the ceiling to $8.50 to kind of catch up for 16 years worth of lost purchasing power. Unfortunately, the airlines are adamantly opposed to this increase in the PFC ceiling. I would have to say it looks pretty unlikely that Congress will approve an increase in the ceiling. So that's very disappointing. A second high aviation priority is to maintain or increase funding for the FAA grant program. The Port of Portland does receive a fair amount of FAA grants, primarily for airfield improvements, taxiways and runways. So it's important to us that that funding be maintained or increased. And then finally, just maintaining the current tax-exempt status of the bonds that we issue at the airport. As I mentioned, bond revenue is our single most important source of capital funding. There have been proposals in the past to constrain or even eliminate the tax-exempt status of municipal bonds. I don't think that's likely to occur this year, but we are always alert to any efforts to change the tax-exempt status of our bonds. Other aviation priorities concern staffing for the Transportation Security Administration and Customs and Border Protection. They obviously provide important services here at the Portland Airport. We want those agencies to be as fully staffed as possible so that they can securely and expeditiously process all of our passengers. And then finally, an important issue earlier this year for the Port of Portland was supporting Delta Airlines in its efforts to gain greater access to Tokyo's Haneda Airport. Delta currently flies nonstop, of course, between Portland and Tokyo's Narita Airport, which is about an hour and a half north of Tokyo by bus. The Haneda Airport is much closer to downtown Tokyo. It's kind of like the Reagan National Airport of Washington, D.C. And it's obviously the the place that people prefer to fly. Unfortunately, the Japanese government has been only very gradually opening up Haneda Airport to international traffic. So far, the Japanese government has not been willing to open it up enough so that Delta could transfer all of its services at Narita Airport to Haneda Airport. And earlier this year, the port was actively supporting Delta in some negotiations that were held between the U.S. and Japanese governments on Haneda Airport. Oregon senators and House members and governor all got actively involved in urging the U.S. government to insist on a much more significant opening of Haneda Airport. Unfortunately, that did not occur. The Japanese government is just unwilling to open it up more significantly or more quickly. But we'll continue to support Delta and obviously want to make their flight to Narita as profitable as possible so that it continues indefinitely. Turning to some other Port of Portland federal priorities, obviously the Portland Harbor Superfund site is an extremely important issue for us. For about 10 years now, we have been careful to keep Oregon senators and House members informed about the progress of that Superfund process. We want to make sure that they're aware of what is going on in the process and our views on developments related to the Superfund site. Likewise, we've tried to keep EPA headquarters informed and aware of our interests and concerns. And then we've also been exploring at the federal level possible new financing tools that could assist public entities in paying for their Superfund liabilities. And we've made some progress there, but still a long way to go before something might become available. Earlier, I mentioned the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I think would be very important to the ports, marine, and aviation businesses. Japan continues to be the number one market for products exported from the Port of Portland, and having something close to a free trade agreement with a market as large as that of Japan would be a significant advance for us at the Port of Portland. Likewise, Vietnam and Malaysia are parties to the agreement, and they're also important markets for goods exported from the Pacific Northwest. The Columbia River Treaty is a treaty between the United States and Canada that was concluded back in 1964. Its primary purposes is to promote cooperation between the two countries on flood control and hydropower generation. The treaty provides that beginning in 2014, either country can notify the other that it wishes to make a change or terminate the treaty in 2024. So that provision of the treaty has triggered a process in both countries to re-examine the treaty to see what, if any, changes should be made to the treaty beginning in 2024. The Port of Portland has been active in making sure that our interests in navigation and flood control are protected and recognized in any negotiations that are held between the United States and Canada on changes to the treaty. So, and then finally, we are very actively involved in the process that we that will lead to the reaccreditation of the Columbia Corridor Flood Control System. That is the system of levees that protect the Portland Airport as well as some of our industrial properties and marine terminals. The Corps of Engineers and FEMA are deeply involved in that process, and we will be working closely with the Multnomah County drainage district to successfully conclude that multi-year process. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, thanks, Rick, for that presentation. It's good to get updated on what's happening in the federal arena. Given the election results in the primaries lately, it's obviously the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a big one, and I'm sure there are lots of people who don't understand how important that trade is to the state of Oregon. So good luck with that one in particular. Any other comments or questions?
Rick, would you mind just sharing a little bit about what you know about TPP in terms of timing? We had heard May and then maybe post-election. Do we have any sense of?
Right. I think it's pretty clear now that the agreement will not be taken up by Congress until after the November elections. I was about to use the word unfortunately. Again, I realize how often I use that in describing federal developments, but there's a lot of opposition to the agreement has surfaced in the presidential campaigns, it doesn't look like members of Congress are ready to take it up before the November elections.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Catherine?
So switching to the state, the 79th legislative session convened on February 1st. It's a 35-day maximum session. We like to call it the short session. It's the third one we've had since the 2011 legislature changed to annual sessions. I believe also there was a vote. So it's the third time through, and it was quite an interesting, it ended up being a 32-day session. They adjourned on Thursday, could have stayed in session till Sunday of last week. And I just thought I would give a quick context. There were about 290 bills introduced and about half passed. In contrast with the 2015 session, the long session went about 6 months. There were about 2,000 bills and only about, I think, 25% of those passed. So a good portion of those introduced actually did move through. And I'd say the nice thing about this session was the February revenue forecast was quite stable, and therefore the legislature was not forced to make deep cuts or changes to their adopted 15-17 budget. What that did is allowed some pretty big policy conversations and some bills that associated with those policy conversations to pass. And I've highlighted a couple of them up here on this slide. Within the first week, there were two kind of competing ways to deal with reducing carbon. One was called a cap and trade or cap and invest proposal. And that was really, there was some energy around that on the Senate side. And the other was what's called the Renewable Portfolio Standard, the RPS, and that is the one that ultimately prevailed, was passed, passed and adopted. And essentially what that will do is it will double Oregon's current renewable portfolio standard of 25% to 50% by 2050 and require utilities of a certain size, so really it's PGE and Pacific Power, to transition off coal by 2030. The second big policy issue, and the bill has already been signed by Governor Brown, is relating to increasing the statewide minimum wage rate. There was a lot of different approaches on how to do this and what that ceiling should be. What ultimately did pass created three regional rates. There's a Portland metro rate, so roughly the three counties. Clackamas, Washington, Multnomah. The second area is a rural and coastal area rate. And then the third is sort of the balance of the state, which is also largely rural. The increase takes effect in July of this year. And by 2023, the rate will be $14.75 in that first region, $13.50 in the middle, and $12.50 in the rest of the state. It's the highest minimum wage in the country. And that took a lot of energy of the legislature. I would say actually that and the renewable portfolio standard, they spent quite a bit of that 32 days talking about those two policy changes. The third that I wanted to highlight is related to an increase in the statewide transient lodging tax. And the impetus for this conversation is a pretty exciting opportunity for the state. The World Track and Field Championships were awarded to Eugene, and they're coming in 2021. It's the third largest sporting event in the world, and in terms of viewers, and it's going to require quite a large amount of infrastructure investment. A lot of that will be private, but the state wanted to talk about how they could potentially participate and increasing the current statewide lodging tax, which was at 1%. Was sort of one of the tools. They did end up passing an increase after a lot of wrangling around the state from different constituents, tourism, Travel Portland, Travel Oregon, et cetera. So what they ended up doing was raising it to 1.8% for 4 years, so 0.8 over what it is today for 4 years, and then back down to 1.5, so still an increase of what it is today, but down to 1.5. And that'll generate about $20 million additionally a year, and $5 million of that for 4 years will go directly to Tracktown, and the rest will be distributed around the 7 tourism districts around the state. There were several bills, a whole suite of bills from both the House and the Senate that were proposed around affordable housing, and many passed. Some will preserve low-cost apartments. Others were related to tenant protections, setting caps on rent increases, some around zoning, and then funding to support construction of affordable housing. And then the last sort of theme was around kind of transparency and ethics. There were a lot of bills proposed. Two did pass that we were quite involved with. One was around availability of public records, and the other was around increasing whistleblower protections. And then I wanted to just, I know we've heard, but it was exciting to see Commissioner McDonald in her Senate confirmation hearing, and then ultimately approval by the Senate. So welcome.
So Catherine, I've got to ask, was that a contested hearing?
Well, she did get a tough question from a senator, and she did really well.
Good for you.
So,
good for you.
So looking, kind of narrowing down to the port's legislative initiative, and when we think about what we want to sort of propose for a short session, we really take into account the time constraints around a 35-day session and traditionally a state budget focus. So we had several initiatives. Curtis mentioned the governor's trade and logistics initiative. Back in November, during one of the interim days, we had made a pretty comprehensive presentation to both a Senate and House committee on what this trade and logistics initiative was considering. We didn't have our final report yet, but we kind of walked them through what the regional workshops had, what we had learned from those workshops, what the consultants were sort of taking away as some kind of short-term, quick things that you could do to help particularly small and medium-sized shippers that were affected by the Hanjin and Hapag-Lloyd decision to stop serving Terminal 6. So we came back in 2016, had that final report, and visited with about half of the members to share kind of what the recommendations were. Two elements in that proposal: we did secure $200,000 to recapitalize a truck driver training program, and that really helps address some of the truck driver shortage problems that were identified by shippers all over the state. And the second was some money to study a mid-Willamette Valley drop pick yard. So that will happen. Regional Solutions will lead that effort, and they should have their findings by the end of this year, and that will give them time to prepare something should they land on a good, viable solution for the 2017 session. Not necessarily related to the trade and logistics work, but certainly in the transportation bucket. We worked with our partners at TriMet to try to get a bill passed that would essentially expand the type of project that TriMet can invest in. Right now, they can invest in transit and transit-supportive projects. But looking ahead to potentially a future regional ballot measure on transportation, TriMet might be in a good position. They have an excellent bond rating to spend money that's generated by a regional gas tax or something on non-transit projects. We wanted to give them that tool. It passed the House, and then unfortunately, that's why I had to put the little X there. It didn't pass. It got caught up in some of the last minute negotiations to basically get the Senate to move some bills. So we'll be back with TriMet and other partners on that in 2017. Kind of piggybacking on what Rick shared related to the Portland Harbor, the state has a very, we think, unique and important role with respect to the cleanup at the harbor. They have a regulatory role through Department of Environmental Quality. They have some potential liability through Department of State Lands. And I think to the extent that our federal congressional delegation has been paying attention to the harbor over the last 10 to 15 years, the legislature really has not. And I think it's easy to perhaps explain why. You have House members in for 2 years, maybe they don't come back. You know, when the harbor was listed 15 years ago, you had a pretty different makeup of the Oregon State Legislature. So now that we've kind of progressed to the point where we are in the process and are quite close to hearing what the remedy may be, we just felt it was really important to get the legislature in particular focused on what this means for the state, and that they have a role through what's called state acceptance. It's one of the balancing criteria that EPA will look at. So we spent a lot of time with other partners, meeting with legislators, talking about where we are in the process and really the kind of role that the state could play should they choose to engage. We had an informational briefing on the Senate side. We had a great presentation from a representative from EPA, DEQ, and the governor's office. And then we're going to really kind of turn the volume up on that here in the next couple of weeks. And then quickly, on industrial lands, we did get a brownfields property tax incentive bill passed with a broad coalition from around the state, and that will hopefully help us get some of these contaminated lands cleaned up, particularly those that are in industrial zoning, and get them working. So looking ahead, both for activities in the interim and then to the 2017 session, which they will gavel in the last week of January of 2017. Last session, and I talked about this a bit the last time I was before you all, the state, the legislature voted to increase the jet fuel tax by 2 cents so that the Department of Aviation could create a grant program for some of the smaller general aviation airports around the state. That program is beginning to take shape, so we will work with the Department of Aviation and the Board of Aviation on fine-tuning that program. I think I'm optimistic that there will be a transportation package in the 2017 session. I'm saying it here. There's a lot of pent-up demand, and there's a lot of infrastructure around the state that could need some, that could use both kind of the maintenance and the modernization pieces. So I think a lot of what I will do with other partners in the public sector and the private sector will be to talk to folks about the need for that package. Part of that, and something that really the port is unique in that we interface with the Class One and some short line railroads, is that grade separation, so removing the conflict between a railroad and a road, either putting the road over the top. I don't know how easy it is to put a railroad over the top of a road. I think that's a little bit more expensive, but there's not really a nice program available in terms of funding for those. These types of projects they're not eligible for Connect Oregon funding. So working on some other ways to invest in those important grade separations, particularly in our industrial districts, is going to be a focus of mine. I talked a bit last time about the Oregon Supreme Court's decision to overturn a lot of the 2013 legislature's reforms to PERS. When we come back in 2017, a major focus of the budget discussion will be around how the state deals with this quite large PERS liability. And I didn't put it up there, but just kind of reading legislators' wrap-ups that they're starting to send out yesterday and today. Healthcare costs, that seems to be another thing that's on people's mind, and that will be putting pressure on the budget in the next cycle. Towards the end of the session, there was a lot of press around air quality, particularly in the Portland metro area. It was a little bit too late in session, I think, to really do anything in terms of DEQ's regulatory authority around that. The legislature did allocate $2.5 million to DEQ for their air toxics monitoring program. But I believe there will be a whole suite of bills introduced in 2017 around air quality, and we will be in the interim and in 17 paying very close attention to those that deal with diesel emissions. I think in the climate change category, the cap and trade or cap and invest proposal will probably be back, and so we will look at that and look using our carbon policy evaluation tool that our environmental team put together, sort of look at how those different proposals impact not just the port, but our tenants and customers. And then it's going to be an interesting couple of months. Filing day was yesterday. I think 12 folks have in the state. So of the 90 legislatures, maybe 10 or 12 have said they are not coming back. Some are in interesting swing districts. Some are moving from, hopefully, from the House to the Senate. So there'll be some musical chairs there, but it'll be a different legislature next year. There were around 80 different ballot measures filed for the fall election. And then, of course, you have the presidential election and all that excitement kind of piling on. Two of the larger issues that I think would have taken up a lot of space on the fall November ballot were both the minimum wage and the renewable portfolio or coal to clean. Those are not going to be on the ballot because they were resolved in the short session. But it will be for political junkies like me, it'll be an interesting couple of months. And then I guess just this was my first short session as the port's state affairs manager. And I guess for me, I was really, it was not what I expected in terms of what I had heard, that you just don't get big stuff done. It's just not possible. There's not enough time. I think given the makeup of this legislature, the majorities on the House and the Senate, it was kind of unprecedented. So it was a really fascinating process. And I think maybe I'll be a little less ambitious on my legislative proposal for the next short session, because I think you can get things done if the stars align. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Catherine. Questions, comments? Well, you've got quite a long list there, at least for your hope fors. So we'll look forward to hearing back as we get toward that session this summer, next year. So thank you. Thanks to both you and Rick. I've got a couple or three consent items. I'll read the titles, and then you can let me know if anyone would like to hear a presentation on them. The first is Consent to Enterprise Zone Redesignation by the City of Gresham. The second is a procurement contract for a Caterpillar D8T bulldozer navigation. And the third is a Port of Portland Fire Department Civil Service Commission reappointment at the Portland International Airport. So does anybody want information on those? If not, is there a motion to approve those? And the second?
Yes.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Consent items then carry. Vince, you've got the next. It's a construction contract for Air Cargo Road. Good morning.
Good morning. Actually, we have five public improvement contracts. We're at that time of the year where we're getting ready for summer construction. So you'll see a few of these here in a row. This first one's Air Cargo Road. It's a pavement that has been constructed back in the 70s, 80s, really hasn't had much of any capital improvements since then, and something that we need to upgrade and will hopefully give us a 20-year life. These are just kind of the the meat and potatoes of what goes on here at the airport every day, actually. So Chris will do this first one.
Thank you, Vince, and good morning.
Good morning.
So today I'm here to request approval to award a construction contract to Kerr Contractors for the Air Cargo Road project in amount of nearly $600,000. This shows the overall project location, which is located out near 82nd Avenue. Air Cargo Road is the main road that leads to the post office. The work entails reconstructing part of the road and just a mill and inlay in the remainder. This shows the overall project schedule. The item bolded on your left is the commission action item before you today, but you can see the overall plan has been to develop the scope, develop design, and now ultimately build that project, which is anticipated to be completed the early part of September this year. The budget and funding, that is the contract before you today. The port staff and contracted services, that covers such item as noted there, the in-house design. We had geotech, permitting, testing, inspection, things of that nature. The contingency on this project is 10%, which is appropriate given the complexity, and it is funded out of our port cost center. Staff requests approval executive director's recommendation.
Any questions? A motion and second to approve?
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Chris has the next one also. This is a public improvement contract for the East Landside Stormwater Enhancement Project, which will place a stormwater lift station and treatment vault here at PDX. We've done a number of different projects out in the economy lot and also in Portland International Center, and it triggered the need for treatment of about 21 acres of stormwater to meet regulatory permitting requirements. And So there were some other projects that we did in the economy lots in 2013 and 14 that also we committed to doing this project previously. So this will resolve those issues, and Chris will talk about this contract.
All right. So this requests approval award a construction contract, again, McClure and Sons, for the East Landside Stormwater Project, amount of nearly $700,000. This shows the overall project location. The stormwater vault is located in the corner of the Target parking lot out at Cascade Station. You can see the treatment area associated with it there, but in essence, we are, as Vince noted, going to treat over 20 acres with the stormwater vault. A similar process of delivery for this particular project as well, and it will be done early part of September as well. Budget and funding, again, contract with McClure and Sons, the port staff, as we touched upon earlier. Contingency for this project is around 9%. Again, that's appropriate given the complexity, and also it is funded out of the port cost center. Staff requests approval, executive director's recommendation.
Any questions? Motion and second?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That carries. Thank you.
All right, Chris is going to stay here. We've got another one out in the economy parking lot area. This is the exit plaza replacement. We've not done anything out in the exit plaza in quite a little bit of time. This is a facility that stays open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this is where you obviously you exit the building and does all the point of sale for all the parking transactions there. So it's just time to redo and upgrade this facility. So Chris will talk about this one.
Right. This requests approval to award a construction contract to Payne Construction for the Economy Exit Plaza in the amount of nearly $1.7 million. This shows overall project location. It is located out in our Blue Economy lot. That's out near the I-205 interchange. But in essence, we are going to place a new exit plaza, construct four exit lanes with canopy over the top, demo the existing facility. Within that exit plaza, you have things such as electrical system, communications, IT, revenue control. It's like a giant IT hut, basically. So that's what the project entails. These couple photos showing the existing facility. The one on your left is the front of the facility, and then the one in the back is as somebody would be exiting, what they would see as they're about to leave the blue lot. Schedule once again follows that similar process we talked about before. This one will be done the early part of next year. Budget and funding, again, the contract before you, we had a design consultant for this particular job that was done through delegated authority by the executive director. Port staff contracted services touched upon some items before, but we also, with this one, introduce IT components. We had some procurement for IT, so that's included as well. Contingency is 10%, again, appropriate for the complexity, and also it is funded out of the Port Cost Center. Staff requests approval at executive director's recommendation.
Questions or comments? Motion and second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That carries. Thanks.
So now we're going to move into the terminal building. We've got a couple projects here. The first one, Robin is here with me to talk about. This is HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning replacement out on the west end of Concourse D. This is an area of the building that was built back in the early 90s. And given everything that's going on down there, it's an older facility. But we also have skylight issues, roofing issues that are going on there. And so we get a lot of heat gain at that end of the facility. And so this project will address a number of different issues there to improve the air quality in the facility out there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This action is for approval to award a contract to Hydrotemp Mechanical Incorporated for the project in the amount of nearly $8.5 million. So if you're familiar with Concourse D, then you're familiar with the area of work on the extension. What this top-down view doesn't show is that the work will be performed in the deplaning level where the international arrivals occur, the end planing level, and then also on the mezzanine space. In addition, on the roof itself, obviously we'll be replacing the roof. We have to open it up to replace the air handling units themselves. And then we will be also not replacing the skylights, but putting a vinyl application on the skylights to help with that heat load that Vince was talking about. The schedule is fairly straightforward. We are here in 2016. Construction, a lot of it won't be visible, but it'll be occurring behind the scenes soon after approval today through the third quarter of 2017. A familiar slide for you, the budget and funding for the project. The contingency on the project is nearly 10%. We'll be doing a retrofit, a lengthy retrofit, in a building that's operating 24/7. So that contingency is appropriate for that kind of a project. Funded by the Airline Cost Center. And with that, staff recommends approval of the executive director's recommendation.
Thank you. Any questions?
Good question.
Okay.
Just curious.
Yeah.
Engineers estimate.
Mm-hmm.
Who are those engineers? Are they in-house?
In this case, no. Some projects, they may be. But in this case, no. This was part of our consultant team.
Are they related to these bidders?
No, they are completely separated.
I mean, they always come in very, very close to each other.
Well, that's
so
great.
That
over time, it can change quite a bit. Depending on the escalation of construction materials and that sort of thing and how far out. I was impressed with this estimate, quite frankly, that they came in where they did.
Just curious.
Actually, on some of the earlier projects, which are more straightforward, it was kind of impressive to me how many bidders and how much variation there was on the proposals. Yeah, not on this one, which is interesting because it's more complicated, but... You know, any event. Other questions, comments? Motion and second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. So our final contract here is for an elevator on Concourse C, a service elevator. One of the things we found is with all the new concessions out on Concourse C, the existing elevators really just weren't adequate to allow the tenants and contractors who are delivering their materials and supplies up to the facility from down below. And so we are needing to construct a new elevator, and Dave's been working this project.
Thanks, Vince. So this last item of the day, request approval to award a contract to Core Construction for a new service elevator in the amount of just over $1 million. The project area is directly adjacent to gate C10, centrally located on Concourse C to serve the many concessionaires and contractors working in that area adequately. Again, the schedule's presented for your review here. The scope development took about 3 months because we had to make sure we could get an elevator of adequate size in the locations contemplated and then validate the plan. Design took about 6 months. We are intercepting about every building system in this retrofit, and then we've had a review and a bidding period after that. We're here today to request the action to approve this contract, and we should be done with construction by the end of calendar year 2016. So the project budget's presented for, as shown here, pretty standard. The contract was Core at the beginning line. We had a design consultant, architecture firm, and port staff, again, to follow through and administer this contract. About 10% contingency, a little about 10%, 10.8% for a total budget of $1.851 million. Airline cost center funded again. And with that, we'd like to request approval of the executive director's recommendation.
So, as I understand it, this is both for the concessionaires and the vendors that serve those folks.
Correct.
As well as some construction access.
Right, that? Right. Okay. Currently, the elevators are small. They're only passenger rated, so there's 4 or 5 trips required to get things up there, but mostly for the concessionaires. They're taking a lot of food and items for sale up and down those elevators, and it's pretty well needed out there for a larger elevator, 10 by 15 in size, so it's a big elevator.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Boy, you're...
Thank you.
You're 5 for 5 here, Vince, this morning. Good for you. So that's the, I think that's the final item on the agenda. So I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.